The final case to be heard this morning is number 2015-389. Carrollton City Schools Board of Education versus Montgomery County Board of Revision. The appellant is the Board of Education. We'll hear from Ms. Fox.
Thank you. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of time, please, for rebuttal. May it please the court, I am Carol Fox with Rich and Gillis Law Group, here today on behalf of the West Carrollton Board of Education. We have two major issues in this case. The Board of Education's evidence affirmatively negated the auditor's original value in two ways. The first way applies to the land. With regard to the land value, this property had sold less than 3 years from the tax lien date for a value of $5,850,000 in a sale that the BTA had already determined to be an arm's length sale and the best evidence of value for tax years 2008, 9, and 10. Secondly, with regard to the building, this building was brand new. It had just been constructed. The actual cost for building this building exceeded $7 million. It was completed at the end of 2009. I think November of 2009 is when this was completed, so 13 months prior to the tax lien date. The auditor did do a cost method. You'll see in the records that the auditor did rely on a cost approach, but the auditor's estimate of the cost for this building, much, much lower, significantly lower. So the value that was originally set by the auditor, which was only $4,664,000 in total, less than what the owner even paid just for the land in this case. So first I'd like to talk about the land aspect. Again, the Board of Tax Appeals previously found this sale to be an arm's length sale. That was despite the fact that the owner did present evidence and quite frankly contest that sale in the previous year's case. In this case, nobody ever came forward to talk about the sale. That had already been litigated. But the BTA improperly applied a bright-line test based on this court's ruling in Akron, which the BTA is doing in just about every case, or at least every case that we've seen. And that is, if it's more than 2 years from tax lien date, the sale is no good, regardless of all the other facts and circumstances that the Akron court held specifically that decision applied to. This was not a reappraisal year for Montgomery County.
It was an update year.
It was an update year, yes. And the previous year, 2010, the value that had been set by the auditor exceeded $8 million. So in an update year and not a reappraisal year, the auditor dropped their value by nearly half. I have no idea what the basis or the justification for that would be. But because they dropped the value below just even the land value, the Board of Education refiled requesting an increase in value. The BOR, again, did not accept the sale. They didn't accept the sale in the 2008 case either, but the BTA did. In this case, again, the difference is that the BTA rejected the sale outright only because it was more than 2 years from the tax lien date. We would argue that the fact that it is not a reappraisal year, it was not a reappraisal year, therefore it's distinguished from the Akron case, and the Akron case does not apply. Once the Board of Education submitted the deed and the conveyance fee statement, the burden of proof was met. The presumption shifted. It was up to the owner to show that that sale was no longer good. In fact, there was no evidence showing that. There was no evidence showing that there was any change in the market, and recency was the only issue that could have been before the board. The arm's length nature of the sale was already decided. They were collaterally stopped from arguing that. The recency was the only issue that could have been decided, and there was no evidence that showed it was not a recent sale. In fact, the owner's own witness, which was an appraiser who had not done an appraisal as of January 1st, 2011, but that own appraiser said his opinion of value for this land would have been the same in 2011 as it was in 2008, thereby affirmatively showing there was no change in the market from the time of the sale to the tax lien date. Because of that, we believe it was a legal error for the Board of Tax Appeals to reject the sale as the best evidence of the value for the land. With respect to the building, again, we presented unrefuted cost documents that counsel for the owner conceded and admitted were actual and accurate reflection of the costs, that these costs were all attributable to real estate, not attributable to something other than real estate, and that the document itself showed that those costs were completed 13 months prior to the tax lien date. In its decision, the Board of Tax Appeals, it didn't even acknowledge that this evidence had been presented. It didn't even discuss it. I don't know why. I don't know what happened. Again, we have, unfortunately, a decision from the BTA that gives us very little to go on as far as what they base their decision on. This case is nearly identical to Dayton Montgomery Port Authority. In that case, the owner came forward, presented its own actual cost evidence showing that the auditor's cost evidence, or basis rather, was improper and inaccurate. And again, this board looked at the BTA's decision. The BTA had rejected that cost evidence for various reasons, and this board said, no, that's good enough. That actual cost evidence is the best evidence of value, and the BTA needs to take a look at that and come up with a new value.
But in Dayton Montgomery County Port Authority, the specific issue was that grade factor adjustment.
It was. However, this court did state in its decisions that the specific cost analysis, or rather the specific cost data, was enough for the affirmative negation of the auditor's value. I understand that in that particular case, it was the cost grade factor. In this case, it's different because it's the underlying costs. But it's our contention that the burden shifted. The Board of Education presented enough information to affirmatively negate the auditor's cost basis, and nobody came forward with any evidence to support that cost basis. So just as in Dayton Montgomery, that burden shifted. We presented sufficient evidence to shift that burden, and there was no reply, there was no response, there was nothing presented to show why the auditor's value should have been correct.
Is the Board of Education's position that the value of this property should be the sale price of the land plus the actual construction costs, or what?
It is our contention that, at a minimum, those two items show the auditor's value was so far off. I mean, we've got a land value on the auditors that's half of what the actual cost was, or the actual acquisition cost was. We have a building value that is 30% of what the actual cost was. Now, we do recognize that on the auditor's records there is some adjustment in their actual costs. For example, I think they determined a cost amount and then applied 0.86, I think, to that to come up with what they determined the value to be. If this court wants to apply that same factor to the actual costs, we'd be fine with that. But at a minimum, the Board of Tax Appeals should have looked at this data, should have recognized that the auditor's values were not correct, and should have looked at this information to at least attempt to come up with an independent value that is supported by the evidence in this case. Unfortunately, they didn't do that. One other case that we do mention in our reply brief is the Blatt case, and the facts in that case also exactly the same. The difference is, in that case, the BTA did exactly what Your Honor has said. They took a sale price for the land, they added actual construction costs for the building, and that is the value that they came up with. And this court affirmed that. We have a special purpose property here. The property owner's own appraiser admitted that. Also admitted that cost approach is the best way to value special purpose property. I mean, there's no question that under these circumstances, when you have a new building, when you have a special purpose property, the cost approach is the best way to value it. I mean, there are several decisions that we've cited in our brief where the BTA has done that. This was a completely inconsistent decision from the BTA. It would be our position that we have overcome the presumption that the auditor's value is correct. We have submitted sufficient evidence to show that it is incorrect. I want to point out to you, too, because I recognize that there is a difference in the fact that the Board of Revision did not grant a reduction here. The Board of Revision did not have access to the information that we presented at the BTA, that being the actual cost evidence. We didn't have access to that at the Board of Revision. We didn't have the ability to get that information until we were at the Board of Tax Appeals. So that is the first time that information was submitted for consideration.
Was that cost information derived from the county's records, or was that separately obtained by discovery?
It was obtained through discovery, sir, and it was the actual cost of information that was provided to us by the owner. And again, counsel for the owner, there was a letter submitted with it. It was stipulated to the fact that this was an accurate reflection of the actual costs and that those costs were all for real estate. So there was no dispute about that. Unfortunately, the Board of Revision, at the Board of Revision level, we were not able to obtain that information, so the Board of Revision was not able to consider it. The Board of Tax Appeals was the first place where that information was presented. It was the first place that there was an opportunity for that to be considered, whether or not it was sufficient to overcome the presumption that the auditor's value was correct, and we maintain that it was. You know, this board has held numerous decisions, especially over the past few years, where property owners especially are presenting much less information, income, comparable sales, listings. It doesn't take much to affirmatively negate the auditor's value if you're a property owner, and I guess we would simply request that the same be true for the Board of Education. In this case, we have an arm's length sale of the land. We have unrefuted costs of the building, which was 13 months old, and those costs support a value in excess of $12 million, three times what the auditor's value actually was in this case. I'll save the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. Mr. Coverman.
Yes, Your Honor.
Take your time.
Sorry to be moving so slowly, but unfortunately my knees are not what they used to be.
Be careful with that podium. Sometimes it's a little odd when you lean on it.
Fortunately, I didn't get my head knocked off. But anyhow, Your Honor, if it pleases the court, my name is John Coverman. I'm the attorney for the appellee, in this case, CarMax. It's difficult sometimes in these cases if I don't give you a little bit of background, and I don't know if you're familiar or not with CarMax. CarMax is America's largest used car dealer. They have buildings that are designed to sell used cars as though they were new cars. They have huge display rooms. They have carousels where you can look at the some 35 to 50,000 cars that they have in their inventory nationwide all the time. We did not present that information, but yes, their buildings are special use. And the reason they're special use is for what I just said. They're a Fortune 500 company, and they know how to sell cars. I would start off by saying to you, first of all, Your Honor, the complaint that was filed in here against valuation referred only to the real estate. And I realize you have all these things. And it was said in the appellant's brief that the improvements were a part of this. And I will point out to the court that item number 12, if improvements were complete in the last 3 years, show date and total cost. In both cases, NA was put, which I suppose means non-applicable, non-applicable. There was nothing offered before the Montgomery County Board of Revision by the appellant, by the school board in this case, except the contract, which we had previously admitted to, that was the contract entered into in February of 2007 and closed on January the 6th, 2008. The contract provided, as all commercial contracts do or should, that the closing was conditioned upon CarMax getting all of their permits, zoning, which I personally handled, and so forth and so on. In other words, they don't go forward with the deal unless they can really build what they want to build. Secondly, there was information in 2009 and 2010. The auditor had billed, had appraised the property at the $2 million mark, that is just the building itself, $2 million and something. Those details are all in your briefs and so forth. And there was never any complaint about that being the amount. Now, appellant says that they had no way of knowing anything about this until they got it through discovery at the BTA. Well, Your Honor, the auditor, and this is very simple, the auditor gets the copies of the building permits. The building permits are on the tax papers that any of us can get simply by getting on the internet and looking at them. And that building permit was for over $5 million, and this is a 15-acre parcel, a large portion of which, probably 12 to 13 acres, is devoted to blacktop. Blacktop is not on a building permit because there is no inspection of blacktop. Whether your parking lot is in a good condition or not is a zoning issue. It has to be maintained. But there are no, so anyone that wanted to look at this, anyone to look at, wanted to look at how the auditor arrived at this could go to the auditor's records. They're public records. They're not concealed from anyone. They were there. There was absolutely no evidence offered at any time in this matter except what was referred to by the appellant. And that is, number one, the contract, which we admit. We're not going to deny that's the contract, that's the closing statement, that's the auditor's statement when the deed was filed. No question about that. I opposed their request for discovery because my position was, and it's listed on here, the only thing that they were talking about in this complaint against valuation was the property sale for $5,850,000 back in whatever you want to call it, 2007, 2008. The closing 2008, the contract entered into in 2007. No appraiser. Property of what the appellant is saying, this magnitude, no appraiser. Nobody looked at it for them. They ask in their request for information who to contact with regard to inspecting the property. I put down myself. I was never contacted. Now, whether they had an appraisal and decided not to use it, I don't know. When we start talking about the BTA had nothing to go on. I couldn't imagine that there was no appraiser. I brought our appraiser along who had testified that he appraised this property back in 2008, I believe it was, for something like $2,600,000. That's real estate alone. I didn't have him appraise the building because I thought, why would I appraise the building and offer evidence of the appraisal of the building when we have the auditor to rely upon. And this idea, the whole idea that's been put forth to the court totally ignores that, well, was put forth to the court that the cost is the best indication of what fair market value is. Now, no, we're not talking about what they spent on their property. Price is what you pay for something. Value is what you get, and the two are not synonymous. I'm not saying this is a building, I don't know who else would want it. CarMax is in the business of selling cars, not investing in real estate. There's no one else out there like them. If it doesn't work for them there, I don't know what that building can be used for. 4,500 square feet under roof with showrooms. Oh, they have a few places where they can grease cars and clean them up and so forth and so on. But mainly, it's just a big storeroom building. It's off the interstate, which is what CarMax always went.
Is there any evidence in the record about the success of conducting the business at that location?
None whatsoever, Your Honor. None whatsoever. And I would point out what our appraiser testified to, that he said he could not determine the fair market value of that building on cost alone. And I would point out to Your Honor that in our administrative code, equalization procedures 5703-25-06, it says true value in money, and these are the instructions that our tax commissioner, the Ohio, gives to our auditors, our county auditors, to make their appraisal. And it says, these are the facts that indicate the current or fair market value of the property, and they shall including, but not limited to, physical nature, its adaptation to the availability for the purpose which it was acquired and constructed, the purpose for which it may be used in the future, It's depreciation. It's obsolescence. And our appraiser at the hearing before the BTA said there are many things involved in determining the cost of the building, and obsolescence is one of them. And it was his opinion this was a special purpose building, and a lot of the money spent on it wouldn't be worth anything to anyone else on the market but for this. Now, we didn't get into this being a special thing, but they did. And it is a special building. I don't know who would buy it or what they would use for it. You could say, well, they could remodel it. High ceilings, 4,500 square feet, into what? Obsolescence, replacement cost, income-producing capacity, if any. The owner shall likewise take into consideration the location of the property. Those are the things that our tax commissioner says must be considered by the auditor in determining this. The tax commissioner also says in the out years, the every 3 years, that the auditor is, in update years, the county auditor shall, that magic word, as you know, that this thing has been changed from in the revised code from shall to may, and all the trouble that this word shall has caused this court over the years. And I would ask the court, I mentioned this to my daughter on the way up, an interesting question, Your Honor. Is that change from shall to may, is that prospective or retroactive in nature? I don't know, but we won't get into that. About the real estate itself, yes, over almost 3 years, January 6th of 08 is when it closed. They're talking about the tax year 2011. 2 years, almost three. Plus, Your Honor, what it says in, I love this statute the way it was written, 5713.03. A tract, lot, parcel of real estate loses value due to some, let me read this to you. Last paragraph, or last sentence of the first paragraph says, however, the sale price in an arm's length transaction between a willing seller and a willing buyer shall not be considered the true value of the property sold if subsequent to the sale, A, the tract or parcel of real estate loses value due to some casualty, or B, the improvement is added to the property. And there was an improvement added to the property. If CarMax had wished they could have come back, and there is, this is right out the window, this sale. Plus this sale, this statute itself says a reasonable period of time, and I cited in my brief that reasonable means fair and sensible. Well, in 2008, everyone knows, including this court, which I'm sure takes judicial note of, and you've heard it over and over, we had one of the largest collapses, or whatever you want to call it, downturns in the commercial and residential real estate market. And this is particularly true in Montgomery County, Dayton, Ohio, that has, during that same period of time in the last 20 years, lost General Motors, lost National Cash Register, lost Mead, which once was an industrial town, Mead Paper, which once was an industrial town, is down. That's why you have everyone scurrying around to find fair market value where it isn't. I say to you, Your Honor, it's fair market value. It's not what my client paid for it. It's not what, truthfully, like many large merchandisers, they don't pay money, invest in real estate with the idea that in 20 years it's going to be worth this amount of money and we'll make money on it. They buy real estate to get in and sell cars. And why has this all come about? Because of the big leasing thing in automobiles. They buy mass amounts of cars when the people turn them in off of leases. 1 year lease, 2 year lease or so. They have 20,000 miles on them. And as most mechanics will tell you, and again, I'm going into my own era a little bit, but an engine really isn't that good until it's got about 25,000 miles on it. So if you buy a car with 25,000 miles on it, you've got an engine that is ready to go. Yeah, not go bad, go good. So all of this comes into the fact that if the basic fundamentals were followed, this being an off year, and there are special instructions in this about what the auditor is to do. In an update, the auditor shall do so and so and so and so, and in D of that same section, it says, do all these things, including such things as a sample appraisal of the current basis. Now, it's up to the appellant to prove these things. It's not up to us to disprove them. There is presumption that the auditor did what the auditor was supposed to do. Now, they put in there, well, maybe the auditor for some reason. You can't cast aspersions on an elected official. Well, people do. On an elected official unless there's some basis for it. The auditor in Montgomery County knows what they're doing. They have people. The guy from their appraisal office was sitting in the meeting before the BOR. Did anybody ask him a question? No. Was there ever anything presented? I don't know. Are my lights on, Your Honor?
No.
Okay. There was nothing, no information. You can say what you want to about the BTA not doing anything, that this was not unreasonable, or it was unreasonable and it was illegal, but what did they have to go on? They even say that in their decision. Nothing. Property of this magnitude and no expert testimony as to any of this, no examination, and the idea that they didn't know what that building cost. There's a building permit. That's where the auditor gets his information. He's not psychic. He doesn't look out and say, oh, they're building a building out here. They get those and look at them. They're called public records, and they're available to all of us. This case just, the Board of Revenge did what they were supposed to do. The BTA did, they were not submitted anything to make. It's not their obligation to go out and make the complainant's case. And this court has said that. And I'm sure you're the one who said that, Your Honor, that it's not up to them to do this. It's up to the complaining witness. If you have any questions, Your Honor, I've been talking fast, but that's it. We just feel that there it is. Can I answer anything, Your Honor?
I have no questions, Mr. Coverman.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Ms. Fox, you've reserved 3 minutes and 14 seconds.
Thank you. Obviously, this court is well aware that 571519A causes the entirety of this property to be properly before both the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals, that being the land and the building. The Board of Education did not distinguish on its complaint what it was filing against the fact that the sale upon which it relied primarily at that time happened to be for land only does not mean that the Board of Revision or the Board of Tax Appeals did not have jurisdiction over the determination of the building value in this case. Again, that's discussed more fully in my reply brief. I also mentioned the Black case, which deals with that, is right on point on that particular issue. The permits that were referred to may have been public documents, but again, permits don't establish what actual costs are. Those are an estimate when the property owner is getting ready to construct or build. And of course, the building permits being already in the auditor's records, the auditor had those, so the Board of Education would have had no reason to present those to the Board of Revision. Again, not indicative of what the actual costs were, as is shown by the fact that the actual costs exceeded $7 million.
Is the evidence in the record of what the building permit would have shown the cost to be projected to be?
I'm not sure about that. If that's contained within the property record card or not, I don't know. For 2011, the statute was shall and not may, and this court has determined on numerous cases that word shall applies to tax year 2011.
But doesn't the exception within the statute that when there's an improvement built on the property affect the usability of the land price per se?
We think that perhaps it can, but common sense would tell us that the improvement of the property with a new building shouldn't cut the value in half, Your Honor. In any event, I think that is in there anticipating that the sale would be too low, that the value should be higher because of the improvement that's been added. Even if that's the case, the owner's own witness confirmed that there was no change in the market for the value of the land, that his opinion of value for the land 2008 to 2011 after the improvement was added would have been the same. So if you're just looking at the land value here, certainly the price paid by the owner could not have been reduced by half because the owner put a $7 million building on it. And if I might, just in response to your question about the Dayton case, with regard to the reduction factor, That was the issue. But the only evidence presented in that case was the actual cost. There was not evidence about the reduction factor. It was simply that actual cost evidence that was sufficient for this court to say the auditor's value was negated, and therefore it was up to whoever was opposing that information to show that that information was not proper to be relied upon for purposes of valuing the property. And therefore, this court relied on Amsdell instead of Simmons, and that's what we're asking for in this case as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
Thank you, Your Honor. All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned. Thank you.
Take care, Mr. Kovner. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. That's my daughter back there.